Do you like the Star Wars? Welcome back then to the Rancor Pit. Not live. After
no, not we're alive, but
yeah,
you know.
Thank goodness. That is, of course, Eddie Medina, my co-host.
And, well, hello, everybody.
The other half of our Star Wars duo. We, as you may know, we spent a month doing live shows nonstop. We let this show kind of go on by the wayside. We poured ourselves wholeheartedly into a full month of live shows. We took a week off. We went right back to our regular schedule, and this show has been just sort of faded into obscurity. So we are making that up to you. We are back now. Mm-hmm. We have fully recovered from the force of July.
That's right. I had one person like reach out to me on social media because they follow the show through Podbean.
Oh, okay.
And they're aware of the live show, but they prefer Podbean to the JediCole.com avenue because they can just download it directly. And they sent me a message panicking. They're like, "Did y'all cancel the show? I haven't seen anything since June. What's going on?" I was like, "Let me direct you to this little site called DeepElementAir.com." I'm not going to shame this listener by saying his name on air.
Well, I'll tell you, there is no shame in reaching out to us and finding out what the hell happened, because it means you care enough to reach out
That's
to
true.
Us and ask
that
what the
true.
Hell happened.
But yeah, we're back. We're
yes,
back
we are
after,
finally back at it. Uh-huh. We did the last couple of shows, the live show. We were concentrating on the myriad creatures of Star Wars.
Yeah.
Because, personally, I'm just silly for them. I always have been. And there's just so many to talk about that we still never really talked about them all.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was a kind of much maligned creature of the Star Wars universe.
No, don't say that.
That could only... I mean, in a way, this particular creature got a break with Episode 1 because George Lucas created something people hated far, far more, being the Gungans. But prior to the Gungans, if you like the Star Wars or you love the Star Wars and you kind of need something to hate on, for so many of us, it was, yes, the Ewoks.
And let me go on record as saying I must be a closet furry because I've always been a fan of the Ewoks.
I'm not really sure what that says about you.
I said it. There it is. not a huge fan of the Ewoks, but I was a fan. I didn't gather that there was a hatred for the Ewoks until a little bit later, once I got older and Star Wars started to make its way back and to the public eye because of Dark Horse and the Timothy Zahn novels, and fans started, you know, connecting a little bit more, and I was reading articles and letters in the Insider magazine, and I realized people hate the Ewoks? what world is this that I'm living in? Yeah, I had no clue.
Yeah,
that
the general consensus was, what's not to hate?
Yeah, I was completely clueless between 83 and, like, 93.
But the reality of it was that, you know, they did get a lot of guff because, the best appraisal was, you know, when my friend Steve and I back in 83 had gone over to Duncanville Bookstore to get our comics. And, of course, you know, Return of the Jedi was, everybody was talking about it because it was big. It was the latest... would be the last Star Wars for a long-ass time.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And, you know, that was a big deal, especially in the heady first few weeks where it was just, finally Star Wars again. And this lady that worked there for forever summed up her appraisal of Return of the Jedi across the board. And bear in mind, I don't think she was much of a Star Wars fan, but, you know, just casual, you know, aware, probably went and enjoyed the movie just fine, but not somebody who was, you know, living and breathing Star Wars. And her appraisal of the entire film was summed up in the simple phrase, "It was the battle of the teddy bears versus the stormtroopers."
The Sturm Troopers.
That had become a personal catchphrase for Steve and I pretty much forever since then. The Battle of the Teddy Bears versus the Sturm Troopers.
This is
for you, casual fan lady at the bookstore.
Way back in the day. I think I know who you're talking about, too, just from that.
Yeah, if you were there back in those days, you know,
oh, yes,
back
I
when
was.
The original owners, you would know.
Yes.
But, I think that was the thing, is that at first blush, the Ewoks were a bunch of teddy bears. I mean, Chewbacca has, you know, sort of primate aspects, but he also has sort of... kind of like grizzly bear aspects and other, you know, didn't look just like a big monkey.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the Ewoks look like something someone would have named after the president, the adventuresome President Teddy Roosevelt.
Mm-hmm.
It looked like something that should have a little gunned, little button in its ear.
Yeah, a little monocle.
Yeah.
A little mustache.
Exactly.
A little adventure hat on, you know. Elephant gun in one hand, spear in the other.
Or wearing a little tan smock and reading stories to children.
Right, right.
with a cassette that you would plug in. I'm going to let people mull that one over, see if you can figure out.
No, somebody who owns a Teddy Ruxpin, please dress it up as an Ewok.
Yeah, I want to see a Teddy
Ruxpin. And send a picture to us.
The Ewok Ruxpin.
Oh my gosh, Wicked W Ruxpin.
Like Ruxby, the Ewok.
Oh my gosh.
So, you know, the Ewoks were, you know, Lucas himself is glibly... been seen saying, you know, how he told the creature shop, dare to be cute. And so, you know, yeah, but...
He says that. He says stuff like that all the time. It's like he's trying to casually place the blame on other people.
Yeah.
Like I said...
They shouldn't have listened to me.
Yeah, I said to be cute, but I didn't realize that they were going to come back with teddy bears.
Yeah, and then at that point, you know, the damage was done. They'd already... bought all the fun fur in town.
You're right.
So, I've contended in the past that they could have got away with the Ewoks. I would have been fine with the Ewoks if all you did, if you imagine in your head, look at every picture of an Ewok.
There we go.
And if I knew how to do Photoshop worth a damn, I might try to put one of these together for something for the live show later on. But if you disappear the ears, they cease to be ridiculously cute.
But then they can't hear anything.
Well, you can imagine that perhaps under their little hoods they have proper people ears.
Gross. It's even worse.
Or even fuzzy little Ewok ears. But the top of the head teddy bear ear.
Yeah.
I mean, the placement of the ear essentially is what gives you this pattern recognition, if you will. You see teddy bear because that's exactly what you're given. If they had designed the shape of them, and they're little roly-poly, happy-go-lucky, Burble Bill kind of body plan didn't help the matter at all.
Okay.
And that was a reference for you Thundercats fans, yes.
Yeah. Here's the thing about that, though. You disappear the ears, then what you're left with is a Shih Tzu. Because I had a Shih Tzu, and growing up, I always referred to it as my Ewok, because it has that same kind of cutesy face, you know, and the...
Did you fashion leather hoods for it?
I did, and I taught it to run around the house saying, yub, yub.
Wow. And I'm glad you brought up yub, yub, by the way.
Oh, okay.
Which is the official catchphrase of the Ewok, apparently.
It's actually a...
As far as you know.
It's a profanity in their language.
Oh, well, in that case, that kid was cussing on the... Kenner commercial.
Mm-hmm. They snuck it by the censors.
That's right. That's usually how it goes.
Yeah, right.
But, you know, and we're going to do a little segment here called E-Walk Like a Man, E-Talk Like a Man. And we're going to do a portion of the show. And this is in honor of the first Ewok made for television movie.
Yes!
Because there's a story about that.
Uh-oh.
That comes from back in the Vader cast days. And the story goes that essentially back then we were working with Vader cast to do a little something for Alcon one year.
Yeah.
And I wanted to do a little production where we're going to kind of Mystery Science Theater up, do a rendition of watching the Ewok movie with riffing it like Mystery Science Theater.
Yeah.
And what we wound up with was I was going to do this thing called Vader Cast versus the Ewoks.
Mm-hmm.
And I sat down to try to write the script, having never seen the Ewok movie.
Oh, you hadn't seen it?
I had never seen what became known as Caravan of Courage.
Wow.
I still haven't seen most of it.
Oh, you're missing out.
But from the standpoint of trying to riff on it,
yeah,
it was a decided impossibility because of the fact that the Ewok, most of the dialogue in the entire film, indeed, is in Ewok, or Ewokese, or whatever it's called.
Yeah, and you have Burl Ives having to tell the audience what's going on as the narrator.
Exactly. And
at any moment, I was expecting to break out into silver and gold.
I was going with Holly Jolly Christmas. In case you didn't hear. Yub, yub. So, because most of the dialogue, in fact, was in Ewok, mm-hmm. I decided for a brief segment of tonight's show.
Sounds like you're backmasking a record or something.
Guilt Paul. What?
Oh.
So, that's going to be the end of E Walk Like a Man, E Talk Like a Man, because that's going to get awfully tiresome, and it was my idea, so.
Just to talk through a whole segment in Ewok?
Yeah.
That
was the idea. I didn't say it was a good idea. It was just an idea.
It would have been a better idea had we had access to Burl Ives to narrate while we were doing that.
Oh, that's true. Cole and Eddie had a great time there on their show talking in gibberish language of the Ewoks. Meanwhile, their audience abandoned them.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Oh, see, and I actually today sat through both Ewok movies for the first time in years and years and years. And let me say that when I did catch both of them when they first aired on TV, and I, you know, of course, recorded them on VHS, and I watched them a few times, and of course, moved on with my life and hadn't seen it in easily 20 years. And I actually bought this DVD, with the double feature DVD back, 2004 it says. So yeah, that's about right. Back in 2004. But I hadn't watched it until today. So 11 years I've had it, I didn't watch it. Cause really what I did is I bought it for Colleen's fourth grade class because she needed movies to show that was age appropriate. And I saw it at Target. I was like, hey, show them this, you know? And just, in its defense, fourth graders loved it. You know, like her fourth grade class ate it up. She said she would put that on and it would really capture their attention. So in that respect, I guess if they were set out to their target audience was the kiddos and they did see.
Absolutely.
But I did sit down and watch both of them today. And I have to say, and listener Eric Shirey is going to hate me for saying this, I actually enjoyed both of them. They're not the best. But they can be entertaining. Now I will say this: the first one, Caravan of Courage, it seemed like it was better as far as production value because it literally came out the year after Jedi. So they had the sets, they had access to the sets, the props, and everything.
Okay.
Even the cinematography looked more than just normal, like made for TV movie. It kind of had more of a cinematic feel, and had a. The music, of course, And it focused a lot on the Ewoks. And as far as like the Ewoks as characters are concerned, Caravan of Courage is really good because it does focus on like Wickets, his extended family, his father and I think brothers and all. They can actually be entertaining. But I will say this, out of the two, the more entertaining one is the Battle for Endor, which the title is misleading because they're not on Endor, they're on the moon of Endor, which I can't believe.
That rather ruined it for me.
Yeah, yes, that would have did.
That was the sole reason I didn't watch it.
You were on board except for that point.
Yeah, I was going to, okay, I'll give this one a chance, but no, wait a minute.
Actually, it's a lot more entertaining, and I'll say why. If people don't want a spoiler, then tune out for like 3 minutes. So we go through the first...
I don't know, after that whole Ewok language thing, I think the people are already lost.
If they're still here, yeah. So Caravan of Courage, the whole point is the family, Sindel, the little girl, her brother Mace, not Windu, just Mace.
Oh, that's
and
right.
the parents crash land on the planet.
Was
so,
it Mace Windy from the original
Yeah, it was Mace
script?
Windy. That's right, yeah.
Because everyone knows it's Mace Windy.
Exactly. So they spend the whole movie where the parents are captive by this large troll ogre thing in the mountain. So the Ewoks and the kids have to go Lord of the Rings style, like Fellowship of the Ring style. They go across land to this Mordor type place and they rescue the parents and everyone lives happily ever after. Well, what
Plus
makes
pirates?
That's right. Yeah, pirates.
Weren't there like some kind of pirates or thugs or?
That's the second one where they had
Sith
like
Witch or oh I see I'm
yeah
sure.
yeah yeah the second one that's the way the second one you know it kicks it up a notch like the production value isn't as I guess it's about the same but to me it doesn't look as good as filmed wise as the first one so the second one opens right where the family it's the tail end of the last movie they've been rescued they're repairing their ship they're gonna get back and go on their merry way and leave the Ewoks behind but before they can this band of pirates that they kind of look like the Weequays, kind of look like the Klaatus, a mixture of the two. I guess they're more like Klaatu-ish than anything. Yeah, they attack the Ewok village. Yeah. They attack the village and kill the little girl's entire family. The boy who you're rooting for is the hero through the first movie. The parents, all of them dead, like within minutes. So then it's like it
wasn't the first one kind of like that was it Home Alone? Where the parents are like, you know, halfway across the galaxy, and they realize, oh, where's Mace? And
that was actually gonna be the sequel, but they decided to kill the parents off. That's what it was.
Okay.
But yeah, they kill the parents off. So the whole movie is spent where the little girl gets taken in by Wilford Brimley. So we had Burl Ives in the first one, and then we have Wilford Brimley in the second one, but it's actually pretty cool because they work in one of the the Dathomir witch sisters. What are they called in the cantina?
Oh, the Tanika sisters.
Yeah, you know, where they're both witches. They work in one of them as the villain in this one.
Oh, wow.
Which I thought was pretty cool. That was cool in concept, but the way they presented her, she comes across as being like a Disney villain. She's very much like the... She comes across as being like the Sleeping Beauty villain, the witch. You know, it doesn't feel
okay,
Star Wars at all. It's like, it's not Star Wars in the least. Not only that, but when she's a shapeshifter, she shapeshifts into a crow. A crow in a galaxy far, far away. They have...
Well, you know, they do have monitor lizards and, like, regular snakes.
I get that, yes, but... That is true, okay? You're trying to defend it. You're trying to justify it.
Yeah, the sad thing is I don't really care about this film, but yet I'm trying to justify it.
This film, it not only does it have crows, but it also has rats and it has horses. So it's like I'm trying to figure out where...
Yeah, they have those little like miniature horses, too. Like,
yeah, that's right. They had horse toys, the Ewoks, that they were playing with.
Oh, they had toys as well. Okay.
Yeah, I think it was they had toys, or maybe it was a little girl's toys. I don't know. I was kind of drifting in and out.
So you were completely invested in this.
I was invested in the second one. The second one was actually really entertaining, but it was strange because it didn't feel like a Star Wars movie at times, but then other times it did. Like, they had the weapons and the apparel looked Star Wars-ish, and the villains did. But I got really excited because in the second one I thought they had dewbacks. Oh my gosh, and they're moving. And I was like, we have actually moving dewbacks. But what it was is the camera angle caught these creatures from the front. So when you see them from the side, they're more like dinosaurs. Like, they're, what would be the dewback's front feet are actually little T-Rex arms. And they're just like hunched over.
Oh, okay. I've seen pictures of that creature before.
Yeah. The creatures are actually pretty cool in these movies. I'll say that.
It's kind of like a guy in a suit type of thing.
No, they're stop motion.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they're stop motion.
Okay.
I mean, it's the best part of the movie is probably the creatures, because they are interesting looking. You can tell that they were probably designed by, you know, Lucasfilm people.
Exactly.
But anyway, I've probably gone on too long with that. But
well, we'll go back to the original Ewoks for a while.
Exactly.
The ones who were on the
big screen.
On the Centauri moon. Or the forest moon of Endor, whichever way you want to play that.
Yeah.
And so the interesting thing there was you had, I don't know, it just seemed like there were so many ways they could have gone with having, I love the idea of when, you know, there were always these little people races.
Yeah.
You know, in the Star Wars universe. And I think that's one thing that episode 1 through 3 was lacking. By a great degree.
Well, you had a few characters sneak in episode 1 that, and not the CGI ones.
Yeah.
I mean, but they were just scenery, basically.
Exactly. They didn't really have much of a role to play.
Yeah.
But, you know, in this case, it was like stepping the Jawas and the Ugnaughts up by about 10 or 12 steps because they got to actually do stuff, you know, be part of the story and everything. But the thing about it was they were just the daring to be cute. It's hard to let that wash.
Yeah.
Because it was so out of place, and you start to think like Randall Graves and Clerks. You know, Jedi was a bunch of Muppets.
I knew that line was going to come up at some point tonight.
Had to.
This is why I'm glad we don't take call-ins for the pre-recorded show, because somebody...
Exactly. Somebody would have called in and
dropped a Randall on us.
That's right. Here comes Randall. But, you know, that it just seemed kind of... I don't know, the semi-comical sort of bit with Chewie trying to... little comic relief scene almost of Chewie trying to recover 3PO's bits.
Gross.
Yeah, well, you know. That's the way it goes.
He's like Data, he's fully functional.
That's right. Especially according to that Topps card.
Yeah, right! Oh, yes! We always have to invoke the green bordered nasty C-3PO Topps card.
That's right.
I wonder if anybody's gotten that card and had Anthony Daniels sign it.
That would be an interesting question.
Because if I had access to one, I would definitely have him sign that over anything else. Well, maybe that tape dispenser.
Yeah, I don't know which is worse, but I think the winner would have to be the card.
Yeah, the wiener is the winner.
Indeed.
So anyway, back to the little people.
So yeah, the thing about it is, you know, the Jawas were interesting, and the Ugnaughts were kind of more or less there. Mm-hmm. But you know, you've got the Ewoks. Here you have this, you know, creature type race where you have a really big opportunity to bring to the forefront your little people character type creatures.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, it's what they're doing with it, and like going with the cutesy teddy bear thing I think it was a tough sell, and so I don't know. I think that's why you have so many people who are hating on them, because you know it's hard to take seriously the battle of the teddy bears versus the stormtroopers.
Gosh, yeah, when you put it that way.
And I know I'm trashing your childhood terribly here.
Oh, it doesn't change it for me. I still love the Ewoks, and I love Jedi. I don't know. People are going to hate me after this episode because I'm loving on the Ewoks so much. But I also, I'm going to say here and now, I prefer Jedi over Empire. There, I said it. Anyway.
But somebody's got to say that, so, you know, it may as well be you.
Yeah, it might as well be me. But he was originally wanted them to be Wookiees.
Yeah, that was, and the logic there is kind of stilted, and then he talks about how, you know, he wanted essentially a primitive creature race.
Yeah.
That was going to, you know, go toe-to-toe with the high-technology empire.
Mm-hmm.
And then he refers to, basically, you know, that Chewbacca is flying around the Millennium Falcon, so that undermined his idea. And I'm like, why? Why couldn't Chewbacca be like the one that got away? You know, mm-hmm. You know, he kind of got out of the area and, you know, got a chance to learn how to do things like fly a Millennium Falcon. And
yeah.
Everybody else was just kind of wasn't... you know, I think that was, it led you to the Ewoks, but there were so many other things. Like, you know, one of the things that's little known is the Yuuzhan, which was the other race that was supposed to appear on the moon of Endor.
The who?
The Yuuzhan.
Well, which one is that?
Well, the thing about it is I've seen sketches, and they were like almost Ewok-like. Minus those annoying ears and the hoods.
Oh, okay, so this isn't a creature that appear like in the cantina or somewhere in the background.
Well, the weird thing is that, like a lot of these things do, it kind of evolved because the original concept sketches I've seen, it was like they had really long ass deer legs and these fuzzy little gelfling bodies.
Oh, that does kind of sound familiar.
Yeah, and then that was supposed to be like the other race that was on Endor, which mm-hmm. would have been an interesting thing. I mean, not necessarily that design, but it would have been neat to see the, like, two different primitive races that, you know, never really hit a technological advancement.
Mm-hmm.
But there, you know, there's something other than just the Ewoks on Endor.
Mm-hmm.
But,
Well, they established that in the Ewok movies.
Indeed.
I'm going to keep going back to that.
Because you've got, like, Tweaky or whatever, Tickle or...
Oh, the little albino monkey.
Yeah.
Yeah, that thing.
That's sort of like crossbred between Salacious Crumb and Wicket.
Mm-hmm. It is. It really is kind of...
You think about it, it really it's kind of frightening. But the thing about it is... when you're looking at, you know, that notwithstanding, the Yuuzhan actually did wind up in Jabba's palace.
Mm-hmm.
A lot different looking creature, and then got reformulated yet again in CG for the special edition.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a creature that looks not unlike the Honeycomb Hideout monster
mm-hmm.
that joins the Max Rebo band in the special edition.
Yeah.
That, you can find on the there's actually a scene in like there's like a making of
mm-hmm.
where you can actually see the Yuuzhan being sort of installed, the puppet being kind of installed in the palace.
Okay.
And it was a dreadful looking thing with these like it looked so much like a puppet. I'm glad you can't see it.
Yeah.
On screen. But, yeah. You know, the thing about it was that by going with all with this cutesy sort of thing and the blue elephant and all of these things that I hated and then came to love. So I did kind of go full circle with the Ewoks, where I kind of like them now.
Oh, really?
Yes, I'm gonna
really.
It's coming out right here. I mean, I did like go out of my way to collect all the Ewok figures in the vintage line.
Mm-hmm.
I had gone out of my way to collect all the modern ones, except the comic pack ones.
The Technicolor comic pack ones.
Yes, exactly. So you know, there's a lot of. I've had kind of the love-hate relationship with the Ewoks, but I think what part of the problem was there's a lot of things that just sort of awkwardly happen in Return of the Jedi.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the bows and arrows that the Ewoks are given
mm-hmm.
don't really look like they're effectively doing their job. And
but,
the,
you know, I will say this.
It's like the Ewok will pop up and pull, you know, draw, and the arrow just sort of like, yeah.
Oh, I know. It like they wobble everywhere.
Yeah.
You're wondering how many, you know, off camera, behind the scenes, how many accidents happened, like how many little people they had to replace because Ewoks were shooting.
Wow.
Because Ewoks were shooting other Ewoks.
Yeah, you just kind of hope that they blunted those arrows.
I know, right?
It's okay, it's just a flesh wound.
Nerf tips or something.
Nerf tips. Oh, maybe that was why they didn't fly so well. They were Nerf arrows.
I will say this, though, in the second movie, Battle for Endor, they in the finale, they get their hands on all the blasters of these, you know, Weequay or Klaatu pirate thingies, these guys. They get their hands on laser guns, blasters.
And they start, lasers.
Laser gun. They start taking out these bad guys, and I thought, I'm watching this movie and thinking, oh my gosh, the Ewoks are better shots than the Stormtroopers are. They're killing everybody.
Wow.
And the Stormtroopers can't hit anything. It's like, no wonder they won at the Battle for Endor. Oh, my gosh. But, you know, the other thing about the Ewoks, did you ever hear the comparison that Lucas made, like the real world comparison?
No.
That he said that the Ewoks, he based the Ewoks, the scenario of them defeating the Empire, he compared it to the Viet Cong menacing the American soldiers in Vietnam. And I'm thinking, I said, wait a second, you just compared.
Wow, it's sort of like Bill Murray in Caddyshack, Varmint Kong.
You just compared the Ewoks to the Viet Cong.
I guess if you're casting about for an analog, maybe that's where your brain takes you, but yeah.
I was just thinking to myself, Lucas has said some wacky things over the years.
It's like the Viet Cong, only cuter.
Yeah, right. I can only hear him say that in a production, meeting.
So it was almost like a donkey Viet Cong.
Yeah, that's good.
Oh, I'm going to get in trouble for that one, too.
Donkey Viet Cong.
Why, look, it's Sergeant Mario. But
That's awesome. Instead of rolling barrels, they're rolling logs at the ATST.
Yeah, and they have to jump over them and go up the
for reasons. I guess that makes Princess Leia the princess and donkey. Man, there are a lot.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, calls. She's like there in her little leather outfit that inexplicably, you know, a bunch of Ewoks in a sweatshop had to suddenly come up with something in like a size 100. Like, no, just take what you were going to make all this into hoods.
Uh-huh.
Just make it into one
make dress.
Body, make a body hood, if you will.
That's true. Where did they come up with that dress so quickly?
I think, you know, it's one of those things somebody was working on. Was
like a little, I guess, yeah.
Hey, look, I told you guys, yub, yub. Yub you. He so owned it.
Right, right.
So, yeah, it was a curious thing, you know, maybe they just had... Maybe it just took a long time for Luke and Han and everybody to get to the point where they found that whatever it was that Chewie was hungry for.
That thing that was hanging was the same... It's a creature from the same race as that albino monkey thing in in the second Ewok movie.
So it's cannibals. Okay, I get it.
No, they're not cannibals. That thing's a different species.
Oh, so in that case, it's not cannibalism.
No. It's unless it's a cousin, then it's cousinism or something, I guess.
Hashtag cousinism.
Donkey. So, I'm still reeling on the donkey being Kong. So if this was Donkey Kong and the Ewok, so does that make Luke Luigi? Because that makes sense, because if he were to rescue the princess.
Luke Luigi,
oh, of course. How did I miss that?
It's Luigi.
Luigi, yes. And his brother, Mario Solo.
Mario Solo.
Something.
But that in a weird twist of fate, it's not the adventurers who are brothers.
Uh-huh.
It's one of the adventurers and the princess who are brother and sister.
Which makes it more awkward when they do kiss.
Indeed. That's why Mario gets to kiss her, not Luke.
That's true! Okay, they corrected that in Donkey Kong.
Yeah, I think in Super Mario Kart, doesn't Luigi lose a hand?
Yes, he does in a freak cart accident.
Yes, indeed. It's rich with analog.
Yes,
which most people didn't realize. Now, Mario's loss of limb there, or Luigi's loss of limb, makes more sense to people.
Yoshi gets decapitated in that same accident, a la the Vader in the cave on.
Oh, I thought maybe they just, like, you know, got really cold one day and they had to slice Yoshi open and shove Luigi inside.
No, they cut open the Turtle Dragon King thing, whatever he's called.
Oh, okay.
Goomba King or whatever they're called. I think that's what they're called, or something.
I don't know, this thing is so digressed. So we were talking about Ewoks, if I'm not mistaken.
I thought we were talking about Viet Cong.
Same thing.
That's true. According to Lucas.
Wow.
Oh, wow, yeah. Okay, where were we?
So, the Ewok War Machine was something that bugged me, and I've written on this subject on the JCU, and I think it was the First Jedi Justifications, as a matter of fact, which I'll try to remember to link to this. Yeah. But, you know, that was always the thing that bugged me. I referred to it often as the Swiss Family Robinson technology, or the Swiss Family Robinson war machine, was that, you know, the Ewoks just seemingly have all this stuff to stymie the Empire.
Yeah.
Like, oh. And, invoking Steve here, he quite brilliantly suggested that what was at work there was actually... The Ewoks have been working on this stuff for a long time, because that Death Star didn't start building the Death Star yesterday. Before they started building the Death Star, they had to build all the support. So they had to be able to go in and, you know, they had to build this stuff there on the moon.
Yeah.
So it took a while to build all that before they even started laying the space foundation on the Death Star.
How does that work?
Now, where exactly do you start when you're building the foundation of a sphere? apparently in the case of the second Death Star, you start wherever the hell you want and just hope that everything meets up in the middle. It's like
a puzzle. You start at the corners and the edges and you work your way in.
It was like the great railway, you know, connecting east to west. I mean, just imagine this golden spike there at the end when they finish, because the construction model, it's little wonder they got so far behind.
Mm-hmm.
They had to redouble their efforts, because nobody was talking to anybody. It's like, I want to work on this hemisphere. You can do whatever you want.
Yeah.
So just, it looked like such an amateur project. And, you know, and that plus property values in the Ewok Village just went to shit.
Oh, yeah, of course it did.
You see, they got this eyesore hanging in the sky all the time. They'll be so glad when they finally get that thing done and they can just move it wherever they want.
Well, the Ewoks had actually, you know, had a town meeting, and they tried to present their complaints to the Empire. But
yeah,
much in the way that people do when they want to build a Walmart in their neighborhood, or if they want to put cell phone towers in their neighborhood, you know?
Yeah, but in their case, they, you know, anyone trying to register a complaint was force choked.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, would you like to address the council? Apparently not. Next.
That's actually not much different than the Dallas Council.
Yeah, I think they're not uncommon to for city council meetings to have at least one force choking.
Yeah. Oh, there goes our city council listeners.
Yeah. Yeah, I know we're very popular with the Dallas City Council.
Oh, yes, we are.
How that happened, I don't know. But
no, I know.
But the thing about it is the suggestion was made, and I extrapolated on this much, much further, because that's the sort of thing I'm keen to do sometimes.
Yeah.
Was that, you know, the Ewoks had been putting up with the presence of the Imperial forces for a long time. And so, you know, they did what they could. And in my extrapolation, I went on to say, that's why you have the Biker Scouts. Because if you think about it, there's absolutely, if all you have out there is a bunch of primitives, why do you even need to patrol?
Yeah.
The reason you're patrolling is because these pesky Ewoks are every now and again coming and monkey wrenching, you know, like, diverting the toilet mains and you know, throwing cherry bombs down the toilets and stuff like that out in the outhouses.
And in their cases, they literally are cherry bombs.
Yeah, they are. They're just bombs that are full of cherries that explode. Yeah, you get this kind of cough syrupy smell, but that's about it, you know.
Yeah, well, you know, those pits could really do a number on the plumbing.
It's like shrapnel. You
know? Yeah.
But, you know, that's why you would have the scouts are out there. They're not looking for rebel legions sneaking up on anybody. They're out there to chase off the Ewoks. That's why they brought...
Wait a second. Hold on. Let me jump in for a second.
All right.
Now, the Biker Scouts, to me, are the absolute coolest.
Oh, yeah. I mean, absolutely.
They're the elite, in my opinion, of the troopers. They're my favorite. So you've reduced them to pest control.
That's in this case. These are like the guys that piss somebody off. They pissed off a commander or something, so then they have to go and do they have to go do rat patrol on the moon of Endor.
Do you think then on their downtime, if they see like a little troop of Ewoks off in the distance, do you think they just for fun just start picking them off? You know, like target practice.
Well, they probably undoubtedly do.
Oh, okay.
So they got this little handy ankle gun there.
Oh, of course.
You just like, you know, do a little drive-by the Ewok Village just to keep the locals in line, you know.
A drive-by on the Ewok Village.
Yeah.
So I'm going to make that meme straight out of Endor.
Nice. But, I mean, if you think about it, the guys that were... The Biker Scouts that were remanded to that duty were the ones. I mean, look at old TK Chubbo there.
Who?
Or BK or whatever they are. The one, yes, sir. Old tubby, old lard ass there.
Oh, okay, I know you're talking. He's the Porkins of the...
yeah, exactly. He's Imperial Porkins.
He's the Imperial Porkins.
And so naturally, you know, as a matter of course, he'd be the one who wound up having to...
Mm-hmm.
You know, he'd be the one who gets stuck... he's like Fat Bastard. You know, oh, listen to you, Sonny Jim. I'm going to send you the moon of Endor and make you hunt Ewoks. Oh.
Are you sure? That's not Watto, is it?
Oh, could have been. Looks like Watto in a giant puppet suit.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
So yeah, anyway,
Chunky Monkey Biker Scout.
So essentially I think that the Ewoks were constantly doing whatever they could just to make life miserable for the Empire during the whole time they were there. And the Empire's figuring at this point, we're going to be out of here pretty soon. We're like a couple of months away from this being a done deal. And we're going to, at that point, once they finish the Death Star, they don't really need all that stuff. So they might, either blow it up or leave it behind or take whatever's necessary and leave the building behind. And, the Ewoks were, the smart Ewoks were like, getting ready to lay claim on it. Like, I'll take that. That'll be my new treehouse.
Yeah, exactly.
And, essentially the thing, the Death Star would have gone away if it hadn't been destroyed. But, the big question for the Ewoks is, I think one of the other reasons they were so pissed off is imagine what the, having a second moon was going to do to, like, all of the biospheres around there.
Mm-hmm.
Because essentially, as they're building this Death Star, it's going to start to affect the tides and stuff. And then
do you actually think an Ewok has the capability to process that?
I don't know, maybe like Ewok Stonehenge or something.
Ewok Stonehenge.
Yeah, there's probably some Ewoks who've worked out the tidal patterns and stuff.
Sure. I guess. They have a medicine man. I mean, they have to have some sort of... Like, Logray was the Ewok that went off to college.
Yeah, he's like the one who... He went off to college, but then he came back home.
Yes.
It's like this heartwarming story of Logray the Ewok, who left his tiny rural village to go to the big city and get an education. But then he came back home to make life better.
Mm-hmm.
And he tried to,
He tried to bring culture and information back to the Ewoks. But no one, they didn't want that. They wanted to stay in...
It's kind of like Harrison Ford in Mosquito Coast, trying to, air condition the jungle.
Yeah.
And these things just never work out. And then he just kind of settled back in. He's like, I tell you what, I'm a medicine man, hey.
Yeah.
It's like Dr. Logray medicine Ewok.
I kind of think he's like the Jor-El of the Ewoks. He tried to better their lives. He tried to, do something that would benefit their society, and they didn't want to have anything to do with it. So.
And then he's like, well, if you can't beat them, join them. So he just went right back to...
Yeah, he actually came back. When he came back, he was in, the full, pants and shirt and everything, like the full thing, and they looked at him like he was crazy because here they are walking around. They cover their heads, but, they're...
Well, plus he also, the scary thing was he kind of got a taste for, human women.
Oh!
And not in the way that they did, cooking them on a spit, but more in the way of, so...
He became a ladies' man.
Yeah, so he learned something from Raiders of the Lost Ark, and that was to have a lady's dress with you at all times.
Yeah, like Belloc. Logray is the Belloc.
That's right.
Of the Ewok village.
So it wasn't, everybody thinks that Leia was sort of befriended by Wicket. The reality is Wicket brought her in to as a snack.
I would have loved to seen that cut scene where they bring Han Solo tied up on the stake, and Logray brings Leia out, and he says to Han, "So, Dr. Solo, was once briefly yours is now mine."
Well, Burl Ives did narrate the part where he's talking about how...
I need Burl Ives to narrate.
How Logray was... spilled his little wineskin when they got... He was trying to get Leia drunk. Well, he called it his family label.
Oh, that clever little Ewok. Burl Ives makes everything better.
Yeah, he's kind of like the... He was for everything what Wilford Brimley was to the first Ewok movie.
Uh-huh.
Which is ironic because you had Wilford Brimley and Burl Ives, which is sort of like unheard of.
Mm-hmm. No, they're in opposite movies.
Oh, okay. I guess they...
Burl Ives was the narrator in the first one. Wilford Brimley was the... let me tell you something about Wilford Brimley that I noticed about the movie. And anybody who has the movie on DVD, please check me on this. Go to an hour and 15 minutes, 43 seconds in.
I love the fact that you have...
Oh, I wrote it down.
...pinpointed all this.
I had to because it shocked me because I hear this... And I had to rewind it, or, you know, for DVD, just... And then I had to listen again, and then listen to it two more times to make sure that I heard. But at an hour, 15 minutes, and 43 seconds, I'm convinced that Wilford Brimley drops the F-bomb.
Wow. In a major... Are you sure this isn't one of those things where everybody thinks that you've got that contingent of people who think that, that Mark Hamill yells Carrie?
It could be, but that's why I would like a listener to check me on this. Because I am 95% sure that in a made-for-TV Star Wars movie, we got the F-bomb, courtesy of Wilford Brimley.
I think, though, that that's in his clause. You know, at that age...
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I thought it was in his clause.
It was sort of like a Clara Peller of...
is that
actors it? Actors in that day, era. And they figured, you know, if he drops the F-bomb, he's going to drop the F-bomb. We'll just have to let it happen. You get a pass at that age.
Okay. Because if it's not him dropping the F-bomb, then it's him going into his whole diatribe about diabetes or something.
Or in this case, space diabetes.
Which is the harshest diabetes.
That's right. The only thing worse than diabetes is space diabetes. Take it from me, Wilford Brimley. You don't want space diabetes.
Okay, now, it's still up in the air whether or not Wilford Brimley drops the F-bomb, but I did not timestamp this next thing, but there is no doubt. There is no doubt that...
So now I'm intrigued. I may actually have to go and watch the Stan movie. Just to check for the F-bomb. But now I know where I'm headed, so I can kind of skip ahead.
This comes early on, but there's a scene... where Wilford Brimley is asleep in his little hut or whatever, and Wicket is going to wake him. He's trying to wake him up, and he won't stir, so he goes and gets a big bowl full of water, dumps it on Wilford Brimley, and, of course, Wilford Brimley shoots up out of bed wearing, like, a the traditional night skirt, the big night shirts. Problem is, when he swings right leg over to get out of bed, we get full view of his crotch.
Oh, wow. So you get like...
We got his Brimleys on camera.
Wow, teabagged by Wilford Brimley.
Basically, I'm thinking, how did that get past?
Well, again, there were, you know...
Oh, it's in his
the
claw.
Nice thing is that Burl Ives drops the F-bomb. He's just in the recording studio and then cut that. Uh-huh. But...
Mm-hmm.
You didn't have that option. Wow. I'm glad I missed these things.
Yeah. So if the F-bomb is still in question, then the crotch shot is definitely not in question, because there is no mistake in that. Oh, goodness. But yeah, someone please check me on that. It would be funny if
I would like to find out if anyone also, even if it isn't actually an F-bomb, if anyone else thought it was an F-bomb.
Well, even in the scene, he's working on something. He's working on the ship. He's trying to get it functional again. And the Ewoks are outside the ship, and they're fighting off these bandits. And so, the tensions are high, and he's fiddling with this thing, kind of like Han and Chewie are in Empire Strikes Back. And something sparks, and he says that, and I'm thinking, no. So it's like even the scenario lends itself to that. So
maybe it was maybe he just said yub yub.
Yes, because the two sound so much alike.
It could happen.
And I did discover one more thing about the movies that made it more enjoyable.
Oh, indeed.
Especially, this works especially during the battle scenes, is if you put, you have the movie playing, you turn down the volume, and you play death metal music while it's going on. It improves it 100-fold.
I can see where that would improve.
I'm telling you, I was like, I'm sitting there watching these fight scenes between the Ewoks and these creatures, and I'm like, battle scene, Ewoks, it works so much better, so much better.
That was a Cradle of Filth song, wasn't it?
I think so. I was like,
I remember those lyrics from there.
Yeah.
Star Wars fans, the Cradle of Filth.
Yeah. That's true, they did write that Ewok song.
Exactly that same man. Which was actually turned out to be a sped up version of the Muppet Manamana thing.
It is, you caught that. It all goes back to them being Muppets.
Yeah, I guess it was just chock full of Muppets. No matter how you slice it, it comes out Muppets.
Yeah. But I will say this, I realized this after I was watching, because I actually watched them out of order. I watched the second one first and the first one second, not knowing, because it's one of the old DVDs where you have to flip it. They have a movie on one side.
Okay. So like the title was not a giveaway or anything.
Well, at that point, I was too lazy to flip the disc, and I was like, it doesn't matter. They're not.
It's not like, like a tremendous continuity. Like Vader's his father. Damn it, I should have watched Star Wars first.
You're like, who's Vader? I haven't gotten to that part yet. I didn't realize when I'm watching the second one that this is Star Wars if Sid and Marty Krofft made Star Wars.
Wow.
It has such
a good... You know, that is the best analog.
Thank you.
It really is. I mean, it has all the sensibilities of Sigmund and the Sea Monsters.
It does. I mean, it really does. The sets, the caves they go through, when they get to like this castle thing, the creatures, even the villainous, like everything screams Sid and Marty Krofft, live action, you know, Land of the Lost type thing. Yeah,
so it'd almost be like Benita Bazaar.
Yes. Thank you.
If he plugged in there instead. So the Ewok lose.
So, the Ewok lose. It took me a second to catch that. Oh my gosh. I don't know. I don't think I can talk about those movies anymore. I think I've done enough.
Yeah, if anybody had a passing interest in pursuing them, they may have had that thought completely knocked out of their head now by this.
Unless they have a fetish for Wilford Brimley.
Or Sid and Marty Krofft, for that matter.
Yeah, that's true.
Crofters, as they're known.
Crofters, okay. I thought those were the Laura Croft fans, the Tomb Raider fans.
Well, they kind of co-opted it, but the original Crofters were...
Oh, okay. They can never take it away from them.
Yeah, or Sid Marty Krofft fetishists.
You know that really exists somewhere. Someone's got a...
Probably is, you know.
Someone's got a fetish for Sigmund and the Sea Monster.
Yeah, it's like, you know... call me Speed Buggy, or Wonderbug. Call me Wonderbug.
Now, I can see, what was the Dinah Girl?
I mean, who wouldn't? I mean, that you really don't have to be a Crofter.
Yeah, you exactly. That spans
Electra
all.
Electra Woman and Dinah Girl transcends all of that.
What was the first half of that?
Electra Woman.
Electra Woman, I couldn't think of it, okay.
I mean, you know, who wouldn't? Who wouldn't go for that? But yeah, that's a whole different ballgame.
Oh my gosh.
Well, with that, we probably ought to bid a fond yib yib to the. No offense to.
I'm so exhausted. We didn't even get into the cartoons.
My gosh, yes.
Or the comics.
Ready to do all the cartoons and comics, too. And that we should at least give that some recognition.
A brief, because I'm so spent on talking about the movies.
Yeah, but there certainly was a cartoon series.
Yeah, I mean the cartoon comic, it's all the same.
It's all just a chirpy little, saccharine attempt to. It was just a serious cash grab to kind of dumb the characters down even further and make them into fairy tale cartoon characters.
Well, I did watch one episode in preparation for this thing of the old cartoon series,
you really threw yourself into this.
I did. I did a double feature, and I did the cartoon, and I read through a couple of the comics. But the cartoon. Well, first off, I was really shocked when Paul Dini's name popped up on the screen.
Wow! Of course, he's been involved in a lot of stuff over there.
Yeah, Paul Dini has a connection to all this. But after watching it for about 10-15 minutes, I realized. This is, and especially you see it in the comic books, it's got such a Smurfs vibe to it. You know, it's like you're watching, like they would remove the Smurfs and Gargamel, and they would put in the Ewoks and whatever villain of the was on for that time.
The thing about it is a lot of those shows, it's just, in fact, I think I remember, somebody told me there was some writer for kids cartoons who once said he used the same script.
Yeah, that was me. That's, Buzz Dixon, writer of G.I. Joe, he said that they would want them to just rehash some storylines. He said that's why this episode of Brave Star is the same plot as this episode of Transformers, because they were just reusing storylines. So I could definitely see them just rehashing. And the comics, of course, were published under the Marvel label Star Comics.
Oh, yeah, Star Comics.
The wonderful label that gave us Planet Terry and Royal Roy.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah.
And Royal Roy. Oh.
Top Dog and...
Didn't the Star imprint also have Peter Porker, the Amazing Spider-Man?
Yes, it had Peter Porker, and then it had a few licensed things like the Get Along Gang and Strawberry Shortcake and a few others. But, I'm going to go, with apologies to you and Andrew Farmer, I'm going to go a little bit Hey Kids Comics here.
All right.
Because for those who don't know, you're not missing much, but the Star Comics by Marvel was like Marvel's attempt to do the old Harvey characters, but they didn't want to pay the license to get the Harvey characters.
That's so true, because Royal Roy was such a blatant ripoff.
Mm-hmm.
And Dead Dan was the most blatant ripoff of Casper.
I don't know about Dead Dan.
there was no go looking up, I want to get... I remember Dead Dan. Where are they?
Dead Dan versus the Stormtroopers. Yeah, I mean, he had Royal Roy was their Richie Rich, and you had, but they all had that Harvey cartoon look.
Yes, that's a very good point.
I heard tell that I haven't done research on this, but they wanted to do the Harvey comics, but they didn't want to pay for the licensing, so they decided just to blatantly rip them off. And then Harvey was supposedly through a lawsuit at Marvel, and I don't think it worked out good for Harvey, but, obviously. But
yeah, that was a point where Marvel was run by lawyers, so they were...
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that...
You don't have to... It's easy to survive a lawsuit when, it's a day at work for, everybody else has to, it's billable hours for you. It's just like, well, go do this.
Very little good came out of the Star Comics. I think the only good thing that came out of it was in the Droids comic book series, which surprisingly got canceled before Ewoks. How that happened, I don't know. But,
I think the reason is they were daring to be cute.
Ah, that's it. What I thought was clever is when they did the droid series, they did a three-part storyline that it was A New Hope through C-3PO and R2-D2's eyes. And that was actually pretty neat because you had a few things from their point of view that as if they were telling the story. So you saw almost like little between the scenes, you know, so that was clever. But everything else from Star Comics was just utter crap.
But, you know, naturally, that I think because at that time, the Star Wars license was still around at Marvel.
Oh, yeah.
And they basically, you know, it was kind of a gimme to do the droids and Ewoks. And, you know, naturally it was in Lucasfilm's best interest to keep the droids and Ewoks out there in the public eye in other ways.
Yeah,
You know, I think literally the Ewoks lasted longer, I think because they were literally the more Harvey of the two.
Yeah.
They did block Harvey's attempt to have a series called the Robot Pals. They were kind of really cute.
It
just never panned out for him because.
You know, you're right though. I'm looking at this issue number 11 of Ewoks. Yes, I have. I'm a completist. I do have the Ewok and droid comics in my collection of Star Wars comics because I'm that much of a nerd. Yeah, so issue 11 was produced in 1987, years after Jedi. So this. You know, technically speaking, this wasn't too long before Dark Horse got their hands on it.
Yeah, that's right.
I guess Dark Horse got it like about 92-ish, maybe?
Sounds about right. So the Ewoks have had many an incarnation. And, you know, the funny thing is that for a long time, the Ewoks were kind of like, in the toy line, they produced 8 Ewoks in the original Kenner line.
Yeah.
And I don't think, for the most part, they were great sellers. Mm-hmm. In fact, an interesting story before we wrap up about the toy line is the Ewoks were apparently being kept under wraps by Lucasfilm. So it was almost like, you know, 20th Century Fox with the Fantastic Four movie, not wanting anybody to see any of this, hear about it, or arrive at any conclusions. But literally, the first card backs that featured some of the Return of the Jedi figures... And also in the catalog images, there were, you know, they basically blacked out the Ewoks.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, here's these two characters, here's Chief Sherpa and Low Gray, and there were these amorphous black inky blobs.
I remember that. And my friends and I could have sworn to my friends, I took the card back to school, and I told them... If you tip the card back in a certain way against the light, you can kind of sort of make the image out.
That's true, because it was
under
weird
the black.
How they did that. It was like they couldn't just like go and put something over it.
Yeah.
It was almost like the printer, they had to go back and add a layer or something that somehow didn't. I don't know how that works, where it doesn't quite...
Well, it's like sometimes when you try to cover something with a black Sharpie.
Yeah.
Like it's like sometimes it streaks in a way to where you can still kind of make out what was underneath. And it wasn't exactly that, but there was something about it. Like if you did tip it at a certain way, you could see.
Yeah.
You could see like the outline of something, but you still couldn't make it out very well.
I'd forgotten about that. I'm glad you brought that up, because I do remember that you could kind of, in the little printed brochures, you couldn't, naturally, but
hardbacks,
it had that weird effect.
Hey, you know what else? I'm glad you brought up the toy line, because it is interesting how there's those couple of weird occurrences with the Ewok village, and you know where I'm going with this.
Oh, yes.
being mass-produced, and then later on they repurposed it for Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves.
Yeah, what was funny about that was it was supposed to be like Sherwood Forest playset.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's all well and good, except like all the doorways in his little were really low to the ground. But you know, it wasn't uncommon for Kenner to repurpose, because they also repurposed the
Gamorrean Guard.
Yeah, well, that's right. Yeah, the Gamorrean Guard got remade into
like Friar Tuck. It's like it literally is the same figure except for the head.
It yeah. Oh, yeah. It's frightening. So he's got like this little head.
Kidding. We're not kidding.
No, yeah. You can look at if you look. I'll see if I can get a side by side for that as well. But also, if you look, there was a Tree Tots was a toy from Kenner, and they used the treehouse from Tree Tots and repurposed it as a little cherubic Ewok village thing.
It was supposed to be used for the other Ewok figures, based on the cartoon. But yeah, they came with, like, like little stiff Ewok figurines, from what I remember, in their pony or something like that. Like the pony.
Yeah, that's right. It had the weird little cartoon pony.
Yeah, but it's like these weren't actual Ewok figures. They were just like stiff little, you know, almost like Fisher Price type things. But you know, but you could use that village that. It was it was almost like a Fisher Price hut.
Yeah, it had this weird little you'd sort of pull the top of the tree open.
Yeah, and it popped open like a mushroom almost. But yeah, it would collapse to close. I think.
Exactly. So yeah, in fact, the Tree Tots would have become the Star Tots.
In the
Star Wars line, and of course they've been paid tribute to repeatedly at Celebration in the collection panels. So as we wrap up the this ball of fur here that is the
coughing up a hairball.
This hairball exactly that is the Ewoks. A little quick story about one of the Ewoks, none other than Mike Edmonds.
Oh yes,
Mike Edmonds was Logray. He will go on record, I think, telling you that was the only Ewok worth anybody talking about. What was so funny is Mike Edmonds is one of these great guys who, you know, they have this degree of celebrity, especially amongst the Star Wars fans, as an actor. But he is one of those guys who just has a lot of fun with it.
Yeah.
Because he will, you know, on his Facebook feed, I'm always kind of like dubious about, you know, when you go and get on the Facebook feed of someone who has any degree of celebrity. You know, how much of it is really them, and how much do they really give a damn about? You know, are they just going through the motions and whatnot? But what's so fun is, like, Mike Edmonds will come to sometimes go on and put up these, like, silly little puns and stuff, and have a lot of fun interacting with the fans who interact with him.
Yeah.
And one day, I had put up a picture of my vintage Ewoks. Or some of the vintage Ewoks, and Logray was kind of front and center, and he actually chimed in and said, right where he belongs, front and center.
Of course, yeah.
And later on, much more recently, he had put a post out and said, you know, apart from Star Wars, what does everybody collect? And he goes, you know, for me, he had a couple of things he listed that he collects. And, you know, everybody was chiming in on that, and I noticed somebody... The conversation sort of turned where something he hadn't mentioned was collecting license plates, and someone had offered to send him a license plate, and I had a some license plates that is holding back for when our friend Stuart from Australia, the Midnight Movie Cowboys, was going to be visiting.
Yeah,
because he had commented on how, you know, our license plates in the States are often really cool. Designs and stuff, and this is, you know, in Australia it's just letters and numbers. And so I held back the last of the really cool Texas license plates for him, and he so I had two of them, and I saw this post, and I said, well, I offered to send one to Mike Edmonds, and it did arrive just this week, and so it was really nice to be able to do that. But I'd also drawn a little sketch of Logray as like an afterthought.
That was a good sketch. Fact,
thank you. I'm not much of an artist to my satisfaction, but I was really happy with that little drawing, considering I didn't pencil it ahead of time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's dangerous for me. But, you know, it was such an afterthought. It was like written, it was drawn right under where I'd written very boldly, "Do not bend" on the fact.
Yes.
But he did chime in yesterday or today and say that he'd had cut it out and put it in an appropriate frame. And I thought, well, that is
that's awesome.
So the picture
that's
there,
awesome.
The little sketch of Low Gray with his package for Mike Edmonds, and I'd written Royal Mail on his medicine bag.
That is awesome.
That's the one we're speaking of. And with that, we will, we're back with the pre-recorded show, so fear not those who were worried we had completely abandoned this project. it's too much fun, so we got some stuff coming up that's going to be amazing.
Just real quick, since you brought up Mike Edmonds, I was looking up at his IMDb page, and he's got to have a good sense of humor, because seeing some of the characters he's played, they have him... Dwarf Librarian, Little Ron, Tiny Taylor, these are actual gnome, gnome, dwarf, tiny man, and animal slash dwarf, Tom Thumb's Army. So yeah, he's got a, if you say he's got a good sense of humor about this, he's got to, because all of his character names just kind of point to the tiny. Oh man!
But yeah, he's a lot of fun. So if you get a chance, check out his Facebook feed. He's a really great guy. And,
yeah.
And tell him the guys from the Rancor Pit said hi.
He's like, who?
He asked me like, who? He just like, yeah, the guy that sends you the license plate. Like,
are you talking about?
Yeah, it's like there are a couple of license plates, but. But at any rate, are back. We've got some really neat things coming up. We're both for this show and the live show. Everything's going to get settled back into schedule as much as possible. Eddie, of course, is going to be all over the place presenting your art to the masses, to the art-hungry masses at many a convention coming up.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it'll be over once y'all hear this episode, because the weekend would have already passed, but... The show after that will be a little show that's called the JCU Comic and Toy Swap Meet.
Yes, in fact, this will be up Sunday, so this will be just under a week away when you're listening to this, the Jedi Cole Universe Comic Toy and Collectible Swap Meet in Arlington, Texas.
Yeah.
Because this is going up on Sunday, and a week from yesterday, as you're listening to this, if you're listening,
we're
to
speaking to the future.
That's right. In Arlington, Texas, you can go to jcuswapmeet.blogspot.com, or you can check out Convention Awareness Project at cap-tx.info for those pressed for time, and check out the listings. You can click on the link there and check out our website. I am, after a six-year hiatus, producing the Comic Toy and Collectible Swap Meet again for the first time under the Jedi Cole banner. And that'll be in Arlington, Texas on August 22nd from 11 a.m. to 6:30 p.m. at the Bob Duncan Center in Vandergrift Park. And I'm happy to report that the road situation, Center Street in Arlington, they're still working on one half of it, but they finished the half that they were working on, so travel up and down Center Street is much nicer than it was only a few days ago.
Oh, good.
I just found that out today, so I'm pleased to report it's not as treacherous a trip as I had originally been warning people.
Oh, good. That's good, and also to chime in, it's also good that this year we will not be set up on the patio.
Yes, indeed. Eddie will not be out sweating in the heat in the patio con.
If you don't know what we're talking about, refer back to the very last live show.
That's right. You can hear all about that. And if you're still curious, come on out to the show and we'll tell you all about it. If nobody's using the room, maybe we can show you exactly how brutally bad it was.
Oh, we got to do that if we can get into it.
We need to see if we can get some pictures or something, because it was an amazing time. So awesome. We will be back in 2 weeks with more simple tricks and nonsense, and be back in a week with over at deepelemonair.com with the Rancor Pit Live. We've got some fun stuff coming up there, including in a few weeks we'll be actually showing Eddie and I playing the game Star Wars Force Grab, which I found on sale at Target, and it is... Let me just say, you're going to have to see this, because I'm anxious to see how this game works. It's one of the silliest, stupid things that I had to own. Mm-hmm. And we'll play with that and many other things. And in the meantime, everybody, break out your drums and your stormtrooper helmets and
and
sing the song that ends with what my little brother swore at the time was the Ewok singing, "Celebrate the Lord."
What?
And I'll see if I can get an audio clip of the end of the...
Celebrate the Lord?
Yeah, listen to the end of the Ewok song.
So the
Ewok's
celebrate
really the Lord. Celebrate the Lord. Celebrate.
Oh my gosh, I gotta break out my VHS and listen to
that. That's right. Yeah, you thought Wilford Brimley dropping the F-bomb was something. So we're running a little long, so we're going to get on out of here, but be sure, if you can, to drop by. Eddie and I will both be, I'll have to be, but Eddie will be in the Artist Alley at the JCU Swap Meet, and you'll be able to see us at a lot of places coming up that we'll talk about on some of the other shows.